I'm Steve Martin. Welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. Our guest in this hour is Brad Kolodner. Brad is a member of several bands, plays a lot of music with a lot of people, but you probably would recognize him easier here on Unreal Bluegrass with the Baltimore band Charm City Junction. Brad has a brand new album, solo album. It's gorgeous, gorgeous banjo playing. The name of the album is Chimney Swifts, which he'll tell the story of that title. We're going to start this section off with one of the coolest versions I've ever heard of Foggy Mountain Special. And we'll get right into talking with Brad Kolodner. Thanks, Brad. Thank you for listening to Unreal Bluegrass. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a great version of the Earl Scruggs classic Foggy Mountain Special. It was performed by Brad Kolodner, my guest today, on his brand new album, Chimney Swifts. Brad, I'm so happy to have a chance to talk to you again. How are you doing?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on, Steve. It's so nice to be with you here.
And I will tell the audience that I usually see Brad, well, this was pre-COVID, but I would see him every year for an extended time at Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival, and I would always run into Brad at Raleigh in the IBMA event somewhere. So it's been like a good year and a half, 2 years since I've seen the man. You know, time flies when you're having a miserable time and we're all trapped in. But
you're telling me.
But I'm used to seeing Brad and chatting with him.
Yeah, I love looking for. I love, you know, the both those events, Grey Fox and IBMA, the conference, are just two of my favorite events of the year. So it's great to be able to catch up with you again.
Yeah, I'm happy. The very first time that you're in there, I went back and checked, by the way, January of 2016. There was a new album from a band called Charm City Junction. And I connected with Patrick McAvenue right away, and I think you were there. Because I think you add in some comments in the conversation, which is on the website, the Unreal Bluegrass website. So technically, Brad, this is the second time you've been a guest on Unreal Bluegrass.
Well, thanks for the reminder. You know, as you say that, I can actually picture sitting around my dining room table at my house here in Baltimore,
right,
where Patrick and I actually were roommates for a number of years, and that's kind of where our band Charm City Junction formed, was here in Baltimore, our hometown. And I kind of remember now sitting around my dining room table where I'm sitting right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yes, it brings back good memories. The early days of Charm City Junction, we were just kind of getting off the ground.
I loved it. And as soon as I got my hands on it, I had to talk to somebody. And I know you were in there because I heard your voice. And then I also, Patrick said this, which to me is a term that I've tried to use in sentences as much as I can. He refers to your father, who's on this new Chimney Swifts album in a couple ways, as the most fierce button player. I think that's who you're talking about. The most fierce button player in, East Coast or whatever. And I've never heard the term fierce button player. And I haven't been able to use it in a sentence. I'm pretty sure he was talking about your father or someone.
He would have been talking about Sean McConnell. Accordion player.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
My father, Ken, is a tremendous hammer dulcimer player.
Yeah.
That's how I was introduced to this music, you know, growing up around it. But he plays hammer dulcimer, and he occasionally will sit in with Charm City Junction. Certainly his presence is felt in our band. But in terms of Patrick and his description of Sean,
that's what it was.
He is indeed accurate. It is. I feel so grateful to be able to play with folks like Patrick and Sean and our bass player Alex Lacamont in Charm City Junction. And it was great to incorporate them on this new project.
There is what we just heard was the Foggy Mountain Special, which is every banjo player tries to play the Earl Scruggs, which is three finger. And so what I liked about this, and I like the whole album, by the way, it's 15 cuts of just some great. You go back and forth between a fretless gourd instrument and also just an open back instrument. I don't mean to say just a. I mean, you go back and forth often. You've written, I count as there are four tunes that you wrote on this album. And you borrow from so many different sources, including we mentioned your father, and I misstated his connections with the button accordion, but you mentioned and you borrow a tune from your father's band from an album that he released, and he also performs on Blue Violet Waltz on the Hammer Dulcimer with you on this album, which it was one of my favorite cuts.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, you know, I grew up listening to my dad's music. And I like to say, whether I liked it or not, you know, hearing it as I would fall asleep at night. As just a little kid, I would hear him practicing down in the living room. And it was never distracting in the sense that I never was, like, irritated by my father's music. It was always so beautiful. And he played in this band called Helicon for many years that fused different genres from all over the world. He played hammered dulcimer, and there was a flute player and a guitar-slash-cittern player, Robin Bullock. And the band was just sort of ever-present in my life. They play, you know, an annual concert every year here in Baltimore that we would always go to. And they still get together once a year for this big annual show. It's called the Winter Solstice Concert. It's a huge concert in town, and it's sort of a tradition for local Baltimoreans at this point around the holidays. And in any case, you know, I was just so immersed in his musical world without even realizing it. I didn't play much music when I was a kid. I played some cello in the school orchestra. But being around it all those years eventually seeped in, and when I picked up the banjo as a teenager, it just kind of fell into place, and it felt like a very natural fit to just start playing with my father, and, you know, soak in his musical, sort of his varied background in the music. And as you mentioned, there are different genres represented on this record.
And,
you know, I think a lot of that has to do with the different styles of traditional music that I was exposed to at mm-hmm. such a young age, and really appreciate the nuances of so many different approaches to music.
That is such a great compliment to that exposure that your father, you know, not like he was trying to beat it into you, but I mean just that you heard it and it was there and available for you to sample from. I want you to talk about Foggy Mountain Special. I want to remind everyone also that each of these tunes has a banjo tuning if you want to play like Brad.
That's right. The banjo geeks out there who are trying to figure out. I mean, it's funny, every time I release a song or post a video online, that the first comment is, you know, what tuning is it in? Because I think folks want to learn it. That's kind of the beauty of this kind of music. It's sort of for everybody. It's community music that you can play with each other. And it's Foggy Mountain Special. It's kind of funny. I'm reminded now of why I learned it in the first place on Clawhammer. You know, it's a great three-finger tune. It's kind of a top five Earl Scruggs banjo tune that every three-finger player learns. And right. And then, I think it was I'd heard the tune for many years, and of course it's a standard. And then I remember sitting in a jam. I think I was down in Nashville visiting some friends, and a banjo player just during a solo just played that classic Foggy Mountain Special lick as part of the solo, and I thought, that is such a cool melody. And when I got on the plane to fly home, I just put it on repeat. I listened to that original Earl Scruggs recording of it, Lester Flatt, and I just, like, I think I listened to it probably for an hour and a half straight or something. And so, of course, the next step is,
well, then you have to learn
when I get home, get out my banjo.
Absolutely.
And I don't really play three-finger style, so I thought, well, all the notes are right there. It's the same open G tuning. I know how to play up the neck. So let's find these notes. And sure enough, it was right there. And it kind of opened up a new little world of trying to convert bluegrass banjo tunes to clawhammer. And it's not exactly how Earl played it, although nobody can play it exactly like he did it.
This is true.
But with clawhammer, it's kind of fun to
take
these bluegrass tunes and, like, reshape them, and they have a different kind of groove, a different feel playing clawhammer style. And there's certain limitations with clawhammer, but there are also some different and unique textures that emerge. So I had a great time with that one, and super thrilled to have actually three of my closest musical pals on that track, including Patrick McAvenue on mandolin, Alex Lackelmont on upright bass, and my buddy Luke Johanny, who's a guitar player here in Baltimore. And the four of us actually lived together at my house for about 3 years. And we like to call ourselves, this house, by the way, is called the Tater Patch, which is a reference to an old time tune.
Yeah.
And so we call our sort of fake group of housemates the Tater Patch Kids. And so that's our world debut.
I get it.
On my solo.
I get it.
Playing.
I get that on many levels, by the way.
Yes.
Lucas is the only one that I'm not immediately familiar with of that group, because I know of Charm City Junction and the music and And Patrick's been on again since then with his great fiddle album that he released a year or so ago. But Lucas is one that I don't know. I also don't know Rachel. Eddie, I'm going to ask you this throughout. I want you to fill in some names. If I forget any, I'm sorry to those people that appear here. But I don't know Lucas, and I don't know Rachel. Eddie appears on a couple of the cuts also. So can you fill me in on those before I move forward?
Lucas is a guitar mandolin player here in Baltimore who I would say one of my first musical friends here in town after coming back here. After going to school and moving back home and kind of figuring out what I wanted to do with my life, he was one of the first people I met to just sit out on the porch and play bluegrass and old time tunes with. He was just getting into playing bluegrass and old time music about 8 years ago, and we lived in the same part of town, and we met at one of the local bluegrass jams here, and just became fast friends. And he runs a local biweekly jam here in town, a bluegrass jam. He's just a versatile guitar player. He can play jazz and bluegrass and great old-time player. And anyway, he's a tremendous musician here. And he's kind of like the person who, like, no matter where there is a live music event in town, there's a good chance that Luke will be there as the guitar player. So he's sort of like the Baltimore session guitarist here at this point. He's excellent.
Rachel Eddy is
a multi-instrumentalist out of West Virginia who's more known in the old-time world.
Okay.
And in fact played with Uncle Earl for a number tours back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And Rachel is a dear pal who plays with my father and I in our band. We've recorded a couple albums with Rachel on fiddle and guitar and actually a great banjo player too and a wonderful singer. So Rachel and I are really good friends and perform quite a bit together with my father and I, and a great educator as well. Really, really known more, I'd say, in the old time world than the bluegrass scene, and so much fun to play with.
I'm certain now that you'd give that explanation that I've seen and or heard Rachel somewhere along the line and just forgot the name, that's all. So that's good. All right, now listen, the opening tune of the tunes that I count that you wrote, Chimney Swifts, the title cut, is one that you wrote, and you have a nice description about the inspiration for you. That's you and Alex. There's a lot of things on here that are there's several solo cuts just by you. There's several things where you, like on this, you do with Alex, and then there's another do what you do with your father, which I think we're going to sample as we're leaving the discussion today with Blue Violet Waltz. But Chimney Swifts being the title of the album, tell me a little bit about that tune. I read what you said about it, and I kind of get it, but it obviously needs a little more enlightening for me to really. I remember Chimney Swifts when I was a kid. We couldn't tell if they were bats or Chimney Swifts.
Yes, that's right, exactly. So for those of you who aren't familiar, Chimney Swifts are these little birds that they do kind of look like bats, and they come out around dusk too, so it's easy to get them confused. But there's this old chimney stack, smokestack right behind my house. I can actually see it from where I'm sitting here in my house. And there's every late September or thereabouts for a couple weeks, there's this amazing sight where thousands of these little birds, you know, they nest in this chimney. Overnight, it's an abandoned chimney, so no worries about it being fired on while they're in there.
Yeah.
And so I was walking home one night and late September around dusk, and happened to just see all these folks looking up at the sky, pointing. And I was thinking, oh no, are we being invaded? The aliens? You know what's happening? And then I looked up, and sure enough, it was just this amazing sight of thousands of these little birds swirling around this chimney. And they kind of form this what looks like a funnel cloud, and then they swoop down into the chimney, kind of one by one. It's this amazing line of birds just diving
and none
into the
of them
and
none of them
gone,
hit the side.
Know, like
none of them, none of them hit the side of the chimney, which I've never, you know, nature.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing how this site, and it's also like in the middle of an urban setting. You know, I'm right here in the heart of Baltimore City, and to see this little glimpse into nature. It's just a really interesting juxtaposition. And so anyway, it was a beautiful sight, and I came home and as it goes, a great outlet for inspiration is to pick up my instrument and just start to pick away at some notes. And I just sat there on my porch right after that and wrote the beginnings of the tune, Chimney Swifts. And during, you know, as a few steps down the line, you know, I think a lot of instrumentalists and a lot of musicians write tunes and then just kind of store them away and don't think much of them for a little while. And then when they feel like there's the right musical combination, they kind of pull them out again and think, oh, this tune is right for this combo.
Okay.
And so during the early stages of the pandemic in the spring of 2020, I potted up more or less with Alex, the bass player in Charms of the Junction, and with my father and I, and we played a couple of duo shows, sidewalk concerts here in town where we would play out in neighbors' front yards, socially distance and all that, and we did some online shows as well, and we worked up a little set of material, and that tune made its way in there, Chimney Swifts, and started to play it a bit more together, and it just felt like the right fit for the title track, as it's a connection to Baltimore, and connection even to my neighborhood, and you know, it's an original tune, and it features one of my closest musical collaborators and best friends on bass. So that's the story of Chimney Swifts, and it was great to have Alex on here for a couple of tracks, also doing a banjo bass duet on a Greek tune. And it's funny, you know, the banjo bass combo is pretty unusual, to say the least. It's not the most common format for playing music. You know, the bass is such a low rumbling instrument.
You know, and it does, and it sounds so good, that low rumble. Every time I walked, I let these things play. I had your album, I just let it play and play and play, and I would come back into where it was playing and thinking, I got to remember that one, because there is that low feeling of that rumble, especially the way Alex plays in the Greek tune, which we're going to talk about, Mr. Pantelis. But yeah, there's some really neat, the combinations are great. And so I appreciate all the work that was done on that. You have so many different sounds. You said the word that I had written down to mention, nuance, early when we were discussing. There are so many subtleties and nuanced approaches to your playing that it's all, each tune is very distinct, not just because you may do different tunings, but your playing is so clear and clean, and there's nothing accidental about it. And I just think you have a wonderful skill with playing open back, whether it's gourd, a fretless gourd or whatever. I really think it's just a crystal clear sound, which I think is hard to get.
Thank you. Well, that means a lot. You know, I really go for that. I think a lot of times, clawhammer banjo in particular, you know, it's such a driving and groovy style, and I was attracted to it when I was a teenager, I think, because it does sound so, it has that drive, that groove that you just, no other instrument really has. I love playing fiddle and guitar and bass and all that, but there's something so unique about the sound of clawhammer, and I was particularly drawn to the melodic side of clawhammer banjo, and how I think one of the goals of the album is to showcase how clawhammer can be a central melodic voice as well. It doesn't have to be sort of buried in the mix as just a one-dimensional texture like it so often is. I don't mean to put down clawhammer players. I know exactly
where you're going.
That kind of gets pigeonholed as this like old-time music, you know, style banjo where it's. And I love that, by the way. I love just digging into an old-time jam as the banjo player with a fiddle and guitar and bass and sort of the standard combo. But it's really nice to show how this instrument can play a melodic role and take solos and, you know, play softly and also up-tempo. And you can play, you know, minor tunes and major tunes and have different sonic atmospheres, as I like to say.
I like that. I like that term. There's a couple tunes on here, Brad. If you're just tuning in, I wanted to let everybody know I'm talking to Brad Kolodner. He has a new album, Chimney Swifts, which is just a gorgeous, gorgeous collection of music. There's a couple of tunes on here that is just you, Julianne Johnson, and they also have as Campbell's Farewell to Red Gap. And that, again, demonstrates the ability to make a banjo, an old-style clawhammer banjo, tell the musical story without getting lost in a right-hand technique that maybe overshadows. In other words, you're getting the melody through so clear. And again, those are just gorgeous tunes as you play them by yourself. And I think that's a great tribute to what you're trying to do and what you've accomplished on this album.
Well, thank you. I've always appreciated musicians who can take a tune and play it solo for, you know, 3-4 minutes and capture your interest through the piece. And I think as I'm talking about this now, I'm wondering if that has something to do with growing up around my father's music. He plays hammer dulcimer, and I think one of his strengths as a musician is being able to take one piece and work through variations and arranging the piece in such a way that it draws you in and it tells a story, mm-hmm. and it has dynamics and variations and it sort of weaves and wanders through the melody. And I think I'm always attracted to taking a relatively basic tune, you know, those ones that you mentioned, yeah. Julianne Johnson, yep. Campbell's Farewell, you know, they're just like 2 or 3 part tunes.
Right.
They're 16 measures or 24 measures long, but there's just so much to explore within this music, and I think I really get lost when I'm playing by myself sometimes, and lost in a good way, where I'm just sort of in the moment with the melody and thinking, you know, how am I building this tune and how is this progressing? And it's not just the same thing over and over again, but I think some of that might come from my father's approach to traditional music and these relatively simple melodies that you can unpack with all kinds of interesting chords and harmonies. And it's something that I find myself really drawn to when I'm listening to a musician playing solo. And, you know, that's a real...
It's a burden. It's a burden on the player, and it can become a burden on the listener, except for what you do is you don't embellish yourself. In other words, indulge yourself to the point of the melody's in here somewhere if you can find it. You have great taste, and I've always thought this about your musicianship. You have great taste in that you're playing a tune, and nowhere throughout this tune, even one of the tunes you play solo, does the listener actually lose track of the melody that you're playing. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are changes and improvisations on it, but it's not like you don't have to chart it out. And I think that wears listeners out. So you have a wonderful ability to play these very, like you say, very simple, shorter tunes on solo, and you do make variations, and they're gorgeously done, but you don't lose the people along the way.
Well, thanks. Your observations are so right on. I really appreciate that. And you know, now that we're kind of in the weeds here, I'll just take it another step further.
Yeah, go ahead.
With regards to improvising, I like to think of bluegrass and old time music as they both have the ability to have the same amount of improvising. It's just the approach to the improvising is quite different, I think. In bluegrass music, the improvising, while it is around the melody, frequently the improvising is more based around the chord progression, which is kind of the macro level
of the song.
And you're building off of the chords, whereas I think in old-time music, the improvising, there may be just as much improvising in terms of how many notes in the song are you actually changing, but the improvising dances around the melodic line more so than the harmonic or sort of chord line of the song. And so that's the way I sort of view improvising in both of those styles. In bluegrass, you know, you venture further out from the melody and you dance within the chord progression. And in old time, you're improvising, you could change almost every note in the tune. But still, as long as it's within the frame of the melody, maintain that tune, and
right.
I think that's what you're kind of referencing.
I am. I'm trying to. You're saying it much better than I can, because I don't have your mind, your mental outlook on music in general. But that's exactly the point.
Yes. And that's really where some of my favorite players. One of my favorite clawhammer players is Adam Hurt, a great clawhammer player out of Virginia, and so melodic and delicate and improvises, you know, each time through the tune there's improvising, but it's around the melody, and that it kind of keeps you hooked in a way that improvising around a chord progression doesn't always. It can be flashy, but I think when you're improvising around the melody, I think even just a casual listener of the music can kind of stay latched on to the tune.
You have to
and
stay.
You kind of wonder, where are they going next? What's happening here? And that happens in improvising around the course as well. But,
You got to kind of remember where your home is and where you're coming back to. And by the way, I know that Adam just released an album, I'm going to say last year sometime, of all Gord's banjo, which is really pretty.
That's right. Yes, one of my favorite new banjo records out there. Just a wealth of inspiration for my.
Watch this, Brad. Speaking of Gord banjos, the second
cut. You must be a pro.
I'm not. The second cut, and I don't need to talk about every. We don't need to talk about every tune because we're kind of hitting and missing. But the second tune on the album, which is an old time traditional 5 miles from town, you do play a fretless Gord banjo. So I want, and I know it shows up in other places, but. While we're talking about Gord banjos, I want you to explain to people what that is, because I think they would recognize Brad playing an open-back banjo as being fretted, and it looks like a regular bluegrass banjo without the resonator. But talk a little bit about the Gord banjo, can you?
The Gord banjo steps back a couple more generations, I suppose, in that in the incarnation and the evolution of the banjo. And I love playing this fretless Gord because it's still a five-string banjo, and I use the same clawhammer technique. So there's nothing drastically different about the way I play it. But when you look at it, it's quite different. I'm standing here with my Gord banjo.
Oh, okay.
I can't see it in radio world, but I'll describe it for you out there who can't see through your radio.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Brad Clodner holding his Gord banjo.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, it's you know, when you first look at it, you think, oh, yes, this looks like a banjo. It has a Gord body, head. It's got this, you know, very large calabash Gord that's pretty deep. I'd say it's about 6 inches deep. And then it has a goatskin head wrapped over it with all these tacks holding it in. And then it has these nylon strings and this one piece of walnut as the neck that's fretless. Little violin-style tuner pegs holding in the strings. And it's modeled after sort of the earliest banjos, which are, of course, West African heritage. Mm-hmm. And this instrument is kind of a fusion of some of those earliest banjos, and there are a couple of, you know, custom touches on it, but for the most part, it harkens back to those earliest days of the banjo when, you know, the first banjos were fretless, and it, you know, the ones that we think of today as sort of the classic bluegrass banjo, resonator banjo, they're kind of fusing elements of the earliest African Gord instruments and, you know, guitars or using a fretted neck.
Mm-hmm.
And so the banjo, the Gord banjo, is kind of an earlier incarnation. And it has such a different tone. It's such a warm, deep
I will
sound.
I will bet, because I can hear your fingers on the head, on the Gord mm-hmm. head. I bet mm-hmm. you could probably, and it won't distort things too much, I bet you could play a note or two and the distinction would be obvious.
Yes, right.
There you go.
And it's a very low, sustained sound,
mm-hmm.
and it has so much power. I actually have it tuned lower for all of you taking notes at home on banjo tuning. It's tuned about a third or a fourth lower than a standard banjo, but it's still tuned to your regular open G tuning, but just down a third or a fourth. So I'm still familiar with the tuning, and it's also fun to play in the context of a band setting, because it kind of occupies the sonic space that, you know, the banjo.
It's a very haunting.
It's
a very haunting.
It's a
little
higher.
It's a little haunting sound. I think the Gord banjos are always kind of a haunting sound to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the notes sustain a bit longer too, so it has that kind of the depth of tone, but the sustain as well. And it's a lot of fun to play and sing with, because while I don't sing on this album, I do really. I find my happy place for singing is in the key of E or the key of F, and I tune my Gord banjo to E often, so it's really nice. And you know, you think about like John Hartford and his baritone banjo, or Bela has the Missing Link banjo, which is tuned down a few steps,
right.
It kind of has that warmth, and this Gord banjo is in that same sonic space.
Oh, yeah, I love it. Well, we're going to come back to mention some of the tunes that you've written. As we're kind of going through this in a style that I think gets more comprehensive as we go, which is good. However, I want to pull your attention to the seventh cut, which was one that struck me almost right away, and I kept going back and listening, and I want you to explain why this tune We both pronounce it now as Mr. Pantelis. It's a Greek tune. To me, it's one of the more, only maybe because it's a Greek, I don't know, but you explain to me that we're going to play that. I want you to lead into that. We'll play that for the audience, and we'll come back and talk some more.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I grew up around my father's music, and for this album, as I was piecing together the material, I was trying to think about how I could breathe new life into a tune that my father's band recorded. I've worked up a couple of their pieces. They're just so deeply ingrained in my head. Whenever I see them play or hear my dad's band, I know like where every song is going. I know all the arrangements, and I've never, you know, I haven't like played with them on every one of these songs, but I've heard them so much that I could probably just hop right in and I would know how many times through this tune goes, and then when we switch to that tune, it's so ingrained. My sister could probably say the same, having grown up around it, and probably my mom as well. But in any case, this one, Mr. Pantelis, was recorded on one of my father's albums with Helicon back in the late 80s. I actually wasn't even around, but I listened to this album a lot as a kid and heard them perform it a bunch, and I was just trying to find a song that my father's band recorded that might fit on Clawhammer, and I really like some of the haunting and spooky music that they recorded. They have all these up tempo and really happy tunes, but I'm always drawn to their the mysterious ones they play, and this is certainly a mysterious piece, and it comes from Greece, and I don't know much about the history of this tune other than that my father's band collected it and recorded it on their 1988 record Horizons, and as I said, it was a piece that it was already in there, so it was just a matter of getting it out through my gourd banjo, and it was really in fact, when I first recorded this, I played solo, and then as I was listening through the bass mixes, I thought, you know, this would be a great tune to invite Alex on to have that low, rumbling, bowed bass that's just, he's a brilliant, pizzicato or, player for old-time bluegrass, but he's wonderful with the bow as well. And so I asked if he'd be willing to play some bowed bass on this one, and it definitely stands out on the album as it's quite a turn. Otherwise, the material is in the old time bluegrass vein, and
Irish
tune, and it's like, where do we just cave did we just wander into for this piece?
It's great playing by both of you, and we're still in that gourd banjo thing, so it's Brad with the the gourd banjo, and this is, we've covered gourd banjos, and we got that back in this segment, and we've talked about your father's influence, and we have that back in this segment also. So we're going to take your introduction and play for the audience. I'll come back and talk to you. We're going to play Mr. Pantelis from Brad Klodner's soon-to-be, I have it, album Chimney Swifts, and then we'll be right back in just a second. There it was. That tune, Brad, is the one that kept, I would come back in, I would feel this rumble, and that would be the one playing, and I would come back in, I could feel, I don't have it turned up that loud, but I'm thinking that that's a different kind of a sound, so that, I'm glad that we got to share that one. You've explained it very well. It's just one of those great, it's funny how that music goes, now you've recorded it, your father recorded it, now you've recorded it to pass it on in your setting, hopefully, to people that will hear it in the future, I think. It's just been one of my favorite tunes on the whole album.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Yeah, it's such a joy to carry on that legacy. I don't think about it in those terms necessarily when I'm playing music that my father has touched, but you're right, it is sort of carrying it on and keeping that, that's the spirit of his music and keeping that alive.
Well, and you mentioned you're not sure where they got it from. They recorded it, so you're still not sure where they got it from, but you got it from him, who got it from somewhere. So now you're passing it on.
I could probably figure out where it came from, but unfortunately at this point, my father and his band, they recorded that like 35 years ago at this point. And whenever I ask them where they got their material, they're just like, I don't remember.
It's been so long since they heard. It's the oral tradition. It's just that oral tradition of hearing music. Great tune. I'm glad you you kind of agreed to share it with us. I know it's not traditional bluegrass Irish. So many great tunes on here are. And it's followed by another one of my favorite tunes that I think I can pronounce. Is it Killaville Fancy?
Yeah, Killaville Fancy. It's an Irish tune. Mm-hmm.
And that has Sean, who you've discussed already, and he's playing. He is, in fact, playing the button.
Yes, the fierce button player.
I still have not, other than talking to you or Alex, I mean, or Patrick, I have no place to use that in a sentence yet, but I'm still working on it.
Yes. Well, maybe if you covered Irish music, that would come up more.
I try. You know, I do. I've had Irish bands on, but I've not heard, and I've had a lot of button players on, but no one's been for fierce.
That's so good.
So I'm saving that.
Well, when I was putting together the material for this album, instead of starting with material and then working from there and matching up musicians with material, I kind of went the other way. I thought about who I would want to have on the solo album, you know, in a duo setting. And it was pretty obvious to me that having each of my band members in Charm City Junction and then the folks who play in my father's band, you know, with me, that was kind of the essentials. And so with Sean, I actually just went over to his house here in Baltimore and just picked out a time, maybe a few weeks before the session, and said, let's just play a bunch of tunes. We don't play much just banjo and accordion, believe it or not. It's not the most common combo, old-time clawhammer banjo and Irish button accordion. We play together all the time in Charm City Junction, but we sit on opposite sides of the stage, so we don't even really... I can't say that when we're performing, even we are kind of buried in the mix of the band sound, and we haven't fully explored that clawhammer banjo accordion combo. And maybe this will be the extent of it on this record. But I'm really happy with how it turned out, because it was surprisingly easy to find common ground. We've played so much together, and he just posted a version of this tune on social media one day, and I thought, that is such a groovy tune, and I want to figure out if there's a way for us to play this together. And I sat there right after he posted it and learned all the notes, and then when I went down to hang out with him, I pitched that tune as an idea, and he said it's apparently one of his favorite tunes to play. So it felt like the natural choice. And you know, we start off kind of slow and then pick up the tempo. And it's one that I hope will open some new musical doors for us in our Charm City Junction sets to maybe do some banjo and accordion duets.
That would be very cool. We've talked a little bit, Brad, about the solo banjo work that you did on Julian Johnson. And mentioned in that reference also old Aunt Jenny. What I would like to do then is just kind of, I don't want to take up your whole morning. I'm taking up more time than I told you that I would, but let's do this.
That's all right.
Let's talk about there are back-to-back tunes by Brad, written by Brad, Tuckerman Lane and Catalpa Hop. And then I want to get to this beautiful, beautiful tune that you do, Blue Violet Waltz, second to last cut on the album that you do with your father. So talk a little bit about Tuckerman Lane, Catalpa Hop, then I'm going to bounce right to the song I want you to introduce as we're ending this.
Sure.
Blue Violet Waltz. So you go ahead.
Yeah, well, so there are four originals on here, and Tuckerman Lane is one that I wrote while waiting for a friend to pick me up. And I think a lot of musicians out there sort of understand that feeling of writing music in those moments in between, those spaces when you're kind of waiting for something else to start. You're just sitting there with your banjo, looking to kill time, I suppose. And sometimes that's when creative inspiration strikes, and that was certainly the case for this one, just waiting for a pal to pick me up while I was sitting out at this beautiful mansion in Bethesda, Maryland, just outside of D.C. It's called the Strathmore Mansion, and I was an artist in residence there for a couple of years, or a number of years back. I was a resident for a year, and this was probably back in 2014. I wrote the tune more recently, but I was just down there for an event and had my banjo and sat out there and wrote the tune. And I wanted to incorporate Patrick on the album in a way that it's kind of funny. This album doesn't have any fiddle, and it was actually intentional, not to say I don't like the fiddle. I love the fiddle. I play fiddle. But I sort of connecting to what I said earlier about how I want to showcase the banjo as sort of a central melodic voice. That was part of the thinking behind No Fiddle. It just sort of draws your ears towards the melody whenever the fiddle is being played. And
it's true.
So I will certainly record with fiddle again, and I know all you fiddle players, I can hear you turning off your radio right now, but it is very much my it was very much my goal to bring in Patrick to showcase his mandolin playing, because he is a great mandolin player.
Oh, yeah.
He's mostly known as a fiddler, but he plays a lot of mandolin on recordings that I think a lot of folks might not even realize in the background there. It seemed like the natural fit to bring Patrick in for that tune, and such a sensitive and delicate melody, and he's so musical that he can play any style, whether it's a blazing bluegrass tune or a really light, fluffy melody like this. And then Catalpa Hop is another original of mine. There's a beautiful big catalpa tree in my front yard here in Baltimore. I live in the Hamden neighborhood, which is right in the middle of the city. And it's actually, I live a couple blocks away from where Hazel Dickens lived for a number of years. So
oh,
fun
cool.
fact for you bluegrass fans out there. So there's a lot of history in this little part of town. And there's a beautiful catalpa tree. I wonder if it was here when Hazel was around, probably. And it's this catalpa tree that has these massive leaves, these big bean pods. It has these beautiful white blooms in the spring. It's kind of a mess of a tree. It leaves all kinds of droppings everywhere.
The beans cover your yard if you have one. Now, what we used to do is take those beans and throw them at the chimney swifts because we thought they were bats.
There you go. Oh, man, that sounds like my next music video.
go ahead.
They are these long bean pods. They're kind of like little torpedoes. They're like 2 feet long, and they fall, and they hit you on the head.
That's right.
Kind of surprising. Anyway, so I sat out there one day and wrote out this melody, which I think borrows a little bit from Bill Monroe's Wheelhouse. As I listen back to it, I'm like, oh, man, there is a little bit of Wheelhouse in there. And that's the way it goes with writing new tunes, is there's usually a fraction of another tune in there. I guess that's just the folk process at work. But I wrote this tune, and I knew that it was calling for a full band setting, so I got Tater Patch Kids, the crew, Alex on bass, Luke on guitar, and Patrick on mandolin, and it's so fun to play with those guys. We've jammed so much here in the house over the years, and they really brought that one to life. And then the piece that we're going to hear next is a waltz that presented a number of years ago. It's an old traditional tune, but he for a number of years has been suggesting that we work it up, and just sort of on the back burner. And you know, when incorporating my father on this album, I really wanted to showcase his what I think of as like his two greatest strengths as a dulcimer player, and one being super driving and percussive and rhythmic on the second track on this album, 5 Miles From Town. We really, over the years, we dial in on this clawhammer banjo, hammer dulcimer groove that's super driving. And on the other hand, one of the things my father's so great at on dulcimer is this very delicate, sort of beautiful style of you know, playing a piece, like we were talking about earlier, with many variations and harmony changes and just like just an incredible arrangement, and you know, especially with slower pieces. So I knew that I wanted to feature both the sort of driving side of his playing and then also the delicate and beautiful side of the dulcimer. And so this tune just seemed like a natural fit. A waltz called Blue Violet Waltz, and it's a gorgeous tune. In fact, I remember learning this one and sort of working it up. And it's kind of the depths of the pandemic, and it just has such a light and sort of positive air to it that it was definitely very therapeutic to work through this.
Gorgeous,
this piece.
Gorgeous. We're going to play that. I know you're in a rush, and I've kept you way too long.
This is great.
So tell everybody where they can find Chimney Swifts, which is the new album from Brad Kolodner we've been discussing. I know you probably have a website, but also tell them any other place they can get their hands on it.
Yeah, well, it's available for pre-order through Bandcamp. It's called Chimney Swifts. You can visit my website, bradkolodner.com, and find a link to pre-order it there. You can also pre-save it for Spotify and all that when it comes out September 10th. And you can also find all kinds of other stuff on this site, including banjo lessons and my radio shows. I host a couple of radio programs.
Yes, you do.
On Folk Alley and on Bluegrass Country Radio. So I'm usually in your seat doing these interviews. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice to have this opportunity.
It's kind of weird. It's kind of weird, isn't it, to be on the other side?
It's really nice. I'm used to just talking to myself when I record my shows. So it's nice to actually have another person to
there
talk
you
to.
Go.
It's
there
kind
you
of
go.
A lonely job.
It is. It's the loneliest job.
But I really appreciate this opportunity, and I hope we can be together.
I hope to see you
soon
again.
At a festival or at IBMA or wherever it is.
I hope so.
It's so fun.
Brad Kolodner, thanks so much for your time. Go on about your business, and the album again is Chimney Swifts. This is Blue Violet Waltz. There's one other tune, Waynesboro, that we haven't specifically touched on, but I want to end it with Blue Violet Waltz and all that good information and lead in that you gave to it. Brad, thanks a lot for your time, and I'll see you down the road.
Yes, thanks. Be well.
All right, bye.